All right, y'all, welcome to the show. So I got a lot of great stuff for you today. In just a second, we're going to get into Michael Moore issued another dire warning for Biden and the Democrats. The reason why we should take this seriously is because his track record in recent years has been honestly astonishing with how right he's been on so many things. He predicted Trump was going to win in 2016 when everybody was laughing at him and mocking him. I think he predicted Biden was going to win in 2020. And then he was one of the only people who got the midterm race right, because everybody was saying red wave, red wave, red wave. He was like, nope, not going to happen. And he was right. And in fact, it was a lot of his takes on it that led me to be more agnostic, because my instinct was like, I don't know, I kind of buy the red wave argument. There's definitely enough numbers out there to make that argument. But then seeing what he said, I was like, no, I'm kind of agnostic now, because he made some great points. So the fact that he's issuing a dire warning for the Democrats, we should definitely listen to what he has to say, because he seemingly has a crystal ball. Not in the exact way I have a crystal ball, but he has his own crystal ball. All right, then we'll get to, we have one of the pro-Trump judges in one of his cases, particularly the classified documents case. She may be booted off that case because she's made some insane decisions, and it looks like Jack Smith is basically going to, you know, put a motion in with a higher court to get her dismissed. I'm not sure of all the legal specifics of that, but that's the gist of what would happen. That's going to be really interesting. Later on in the show, we have a 400 millionaire goon goes on CNN and absolutely melts down trying to defend Trump. It's kind of an embarrassing video, if I'm honest with you. He talks over the hosts and makes an ass of himself, so we'll dive into that. And then later on in the show, we have a new World Happiness Report that came out. And I'm going to tell you where the U.S. ranks. And unsurprisingly, it's not pretty. It turns out people in this country, on average, are really not all that happy. So we'll talk about all that and much more. Everybody, you know the shameless plugs, you know the drill. Please subscribe to the channel. It helps out massively in the algorithm. Costs you nothing at all. We're trying to get to that 10 million sub number, and we got a long way to go. But we build it one at a time. So hook a brother up with a sub. All right, let's go ahead and dive into it. So this is in Mediaite. Michael Moore issues dire warning to Democrats. Quote, Trump is smarter than us. Damn. Now, that's a bold comment that's going to generate quite a few headlines. Let's see what he has to say. Michael Moore warned his audience that even he knew sounded a little shocking coming from him. Donald Trump is smarter than us. On the last episode of his Rumble podcast released Sunday, Moore said many are concerned and nervous about November's election, and he noted that Michigan's Democratic Party results showed that Trump winning is a legitimate fear. Moore was one of the activists behind a movement in Michigan encouraging voters to cast uncommitted ballots to protest Biden's support of Israel in the Israel-Hamas war amid growing civilian casualties in Gaza. Quote, you can lose Michigan just by having 10,000 people sit out, Moore said. The uncommitted movement ended up receiving more than 100,000 votes. Moore turned to Trump and admitted his latest warning to his listeners might get them calling for him to be locked away. Quote, we don't want to say this out loud, but I'm going to say it. And the reason we need to be concerned is that Trump is smarter than us. I'll just let that sink in for a second. I know, you're calling the people to come find me, the guys in the white uniforms with the big net, and take me away. Are you crazy? What do you mean he's smarter than us? Moore clarified that in some ways, Trump is dumber. But I'm talking about the way throughout his entire life, he's been able to pull shit off and get away with it. It's an amazing record. You know the record. Moore expressed concern that Trump will be successful in delaying all of his trials until past November's election. All right, we're going to come back to that because that is a huge point. And that's like basically the only thing in regards to his court cases that I'm scared of as well. The director declared that the former president has never paid a price for a variety of his behaviors, crimes, various things he did with his father, racist stuff, sexual assault, etc., etc. The director theorized that even if Trump is caught in the midst of a criminal trial, he could likely win a not guilty verdict or at least a hung jury. Quote, you must marvel at how somebody that stupid is that smart when it comes to the performance of his evil and his ability to never have to pay for it, Moore said. Okay, some bold ass comments here, man. So, all right, let me explain where I think he's right and wrong. Where I think he's 100% right, and this scares the shit out of me too, is I don't fear that he's going to win all of his cases. there are 91 criminal charges against Trump. 91. Even if he just goes down on like 7 of them, that's a big deal. And that could be time behind bars. So I'm not worried about whether or not he did it, whether or not he'll be found guilty in some of them. I think it's already a foregone conclusion he's going to be found guilty in some of them. And he already has been found guilty in a lot of his civil trials. He's been found liable for defamation. He's been found liable for fraud, business fraud, tax fraud, insurance fraud. He has to pay that tremendous amount of money, over $450 million as a result of it. So the whole Teflon Don thing is done. He's not Teflon. Clearly, there are some ways you can get him. And they have, right? But the thing I'm afraid of is exactly that. That if he keeps doing these delay tactics and the court keeps going along with it, or even just going along with some of his delay tactics, then it is very, very likely you're delaying all of his trials past the November election, which means what? You're going to get a conclusion on the November election before we know if he's guilty on any of the felonies. And then all of a sudden now we're in a constitutional crisis because according to the Constitution, the president can only be impeached. When they're a sitting president, they can only be impeached. They can't be put behind bars in a criminal conviction. Now, you know, when he gets back out of prison, that's a different question. And he could certainly be found guilty and put behind bars in that scenario. But if we don't have a conclusion to the trials, and then you have the election before we know, and he wins, well, then that's it. Like, all of this work here on these cases, it's on pause for 4 years. And so that absolutely scares the shit out of me. And this is what he's saying. He's saying it's going to happen. Trump will be successful in delaying all of his trials until past November's election. And the fact that he's saying that leads me to believe, fuck, look at his record of getting all the other things right. If he's right about this, oh boy, we're in trouble. Now, my disagreement with him is, I think he's overstating the other stuff a little bit. It is a little bit too much of that Teflon Don idea. Yes, I grant you, there was a time where seemingly the motherfucker got away with everything. Every single thing, he got away with it. Even when they tried to impeach him, it would get through the House, but it would die in the Senate. When they tried Russiagate and the Mueller investigation, well, guess what? They came back with that and said, sorry, there's really no direct ties to Russia. We can't take anybody down over some Russia shit. They were able to get Paul Manafort and some of the other campaign people on regular corruption stuff. Michael Flynn was doing shit for the Turkish government. So there's real stuff there, but it just wasn't vis-a-vis Russia, and Trump walked away sort of unscathed. If anything, it helped him. So there was certainly a time where he would just get away with everything. But what the civil trials have taught us is that time is up. That when you got to pay over $450 million for your various crimes, that's a big deal. He can't even get a bond for that amount of money, which means it's very likely they'll seize assets unless the higher court steps in. So I don't agree with him on the Teflon thing. Yes, there was a time he was Teflon. He's not Teflon anymore. But what I do agree with him on is the delay tactics, and that might work. Now, the final point I'll make is this. For the election, I don't actually fear Trump himself for the election, because in my opinion, the only way he can win is if Biden cannot get his shit together at all, right? Look, fact of the matter is, 91 criminal charges, Trump's an extremist. He really doesn't fare well. Every election since 2016, he's underperformed. MAGA Republicans have underperformed. So it's not really about him. My biggest fear is Biden can't pull it together and get the right strategy and do the right policies to defeat him, right? So in other words, if Trump wins, it wouldn't really be Trump winning. It would be Biden losing. You understand what I'm saying? You understand the distinction? And so for Biden, like, dude, you got to stop arming and funding Israel. Your numbers have fallen off a cliff with young people, and you need them to win. And they're saying very clearly, for the love of God, stop arming Israel. They're carpet bombing babies. Enough. Enough. So that's a big issue. The other thing is, yes, you can run a campaign on talking about how shitty Trump is. Of course. But that's only part of the picture. The other thing you have to do is say what you're going to do. So, for example, a lot of Democratic governors have come out and said, we're going to eliminate medical debt in our state. That's amazing. It's amazing. They're wiping out all medical debt. That's insane. If Biden were to do that at the national level, oh, my God, he'd immediately see a 5-point polling bump. 41% of Americans have medical debt. It's the top cause of bankruptcy in the country. If you wipe that out, boom, 5-point bump guaranteed. So you need to have like real tangible policy plans and get your campaigning shit together. And they better keep him on the sauce to make it so that he doesn't have any more of those senior moments where he looks like, forget 81, it looks like he's 117. If you don't have him on the right mix, the right cocktail of substances. So that's what I fear more. Look, bottom line is this election is a race to the bottom anyway, right? It's who do the American people hate less? Is it Trump or is it Biden? That's what this comes down to. But the fact that Michael Moore is basically saying, look, strategically in some ways, Trump is kind of smarter than us. Woo, be afraid, man. And I got my eye on this closely to see as time moves on, as we get closer to the election, to see if he comes out with a hard prediction. Because if he comes out with a hard prediction one way or the other, I mean, his track record has been so spot on that I think the instincts would likely be correct. So we'll see what happens. But yet again, this is a dire warning. The other thing is don't underestimate him, right? You can't underestimate him. You have to act like you're always 5 points down, 10 points down, and really try to run through the tape, right? And I don't know if they have that in them. I hope they do, but I don't know if they have that in them. All right, so this is a big deal, guys, what I'm about to lay out for you right now. Judge Cannon, who was a Trump-appointed judge who is overseeing his classified documents case, she could potentially be removed from the case altogether after the latest stunt that she just pulled. So let me walk you through this. This is from David Edwards. He lays out, U.S. District Court Judge Aileen Cannon. Did they say Eileen or Aileen? I don't know. It's spelled Aileen, but I'm guessing they say Eileen. Anyway, could be removed from a classified documents case against Donald Trump, according to a report. On Monday, Cannon shocked experts by proposing jury instructions that would suggest that a president had sole authority to declare documents a personal record, essentially dismissing the case against Trump. Daily Beast columnist Ray Brescia wrote Tuesday that Cannon is on track to lose jurisdiction in the case. Quote, over the last 6 months, a slow-moving car crash of a case has been unfolding, with a judge who seems committed to protecting the former president at every turn of the road. At worst, she is doing all she can to protect the former president from facing the classified documents case before the election, if at all. Legal experts have suggested special counsel Jack Smith may be forced to appeal to a higher court. Quote, should Smith ask an appellate court to review Judge Cannon's rulings, not only is he likely to get those decisions reversed, her actions to delay and attempt to block the effort to bring the former president to justice may end up getting her removed from the case altogether. Brescia said the court could order a new judge to take up the case. Quote, if Judge Aileen Cannon, doesn't even say her name there, and I said Aileen, I can't help myself. If Judge Cannon keeps going down this road, Smith can seek an immediate appeal of any of those orders that seem to improperly hamstring his prosecution and ask the appellate court. The column continued. In this instance, that would be the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, the same court that previously overturned Cannon in her fool's errand related to the search of Mar-a-Lago. Smith can ask the court to not just overturn those orders, but also reassign the case to a different judge. Judge Cannon's willingness to show favor for the former president may ultimately backfire and get her kicked off the case. Remember, she was appointed by Trump, so she thinks she probably like owes him, and this is her way of doing that. And the case could end up being assigned to a new judge who may not be as willing to bend over backward in support of dubious claims and defenses that support Trump's ultimate goal of delaying the case until at least past the 2024 election, if at all. So, by the way, what sparked this article? Well, Judge Cannon made a decision that legal experts across the political spectrum looked at and were like, what? What are you doing? So basically what she ruled is, if you want this case to proceed, you're going to have to show a jury the classified documents that Trump was basically stealing and storing and refusing to give up. The jury is going to need to see that classified information. And if you don't show them that classified information, then effectively the case is going to be dismissed because I'm ordering you have to show them. Well, they don't have clearance. Legally, they're not allowed to do that. They're not allowed to look at those documents. There's highly sensitive secrets in those documents. And so basically what this is looked at is she's trying to come up with a shortcut to just dismiss this thing outright and have some, you know, brittle legal justification to back up what she's doing. But as they point out, it's not like Jack Smith doesn't have other options. And look, if I'm him, I'm invoking those options. The fact of the matter is this. She shouldn't be on the case in the first place. It is the height of bias that you were appointed by this guy, and now we expect you to be objective? Look, to be fair, there have been Trump-appointed judges that ruled against him. It happened with when he was trying to say the election was stolen. There's a bunch of pro-Trump judges, bunch of Bush-appointed judges, Republicans. They were like, this is wrong. We're dismissing this. So it's possible they could do the right thing. But she hasn't shown the ability to be objective. This looks like, yeah, I'm going to pay him back because he looked out for me. And so, look, if he decides to pull the trigger on that and go up the chain of command, I think it'll work. I think they'll grant it to him. Because some of these decisions that she's coming down with are preposterous. So if she were to get kicked off this, that'd be a huge deal. And by the way, let me say this. On the legal merits of all the various cases against Trump, 91 criminal charges, I actually think the classified documents case is the most open and shut that there is. It's the most black and white. It's the most obvious to point out with the amount of evidence that we have, with all of the details and the specifics that, oh, he was obviously doing something completely illegal. He refused to comply when he was supposed to give up the documents. He stonewalled for a year or a year and a half. They were shuffling the documents around Mar-a-Lago in a bathroom at one time. They were trying to take down the security camera that had the footage to delete the footage so you couldn't see that they were tampering with it after the FBI had already said, you got to give this stuff back. So these are all, this is all a big deal. And this is an open and shut case. And if she's trying to dismiss out of hand this open and shut case, yeah, I think judges up the chain of command are going to be like, sorry, we're going to kick you off this case. So we'll see what happens. But man, she got herself into some hot water. She's not being very artful with her bias. It's very blunt and brazen, and that may backfire. All right, y'all. I have for you now a tale as old as time. So I remember back 2008, 2009, we had the subprime mortgage crisis, the Great Recession. Everybody was struggling. They did a stimulus bill. I think it was $787 billion. And as part of that stimulus bill, of course, there were all these like little infrastructure projects all around the country. And what happened is virtually all the Republicans voted against this stimulus bill. But then when the money started coming into their districts, for projects, for their roads and their bridges and their constituents, all of a sudden, these people who voted against the bill would start bragging that they brought this money into their district. Shameful. Well, to them, shameless, actually, is what it is. So acting like they were responsible for this positive thing that was happening when they fucking voted against that thing, this happens all the time. This just happened. We covered a local news segment. I think it was in Miami. You have a female Republican congresswoman who was taking credit for something she voted against. And apparently the host did his homework and really grilled her on that. And she embarrassed herself, basically had no answer whatsoever. Lauren Boebert just did this. We talked about that. Well, now we got another one of the morons. Marjorie Taylor Greene brags about federal funds coming into her district that she voted against. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene sent out email blasts in recent days boasting of securing federal funds for infrastructure projects in her district that she actually voted against. Greene raged against a package of funding bills earlier this year, saying, quote, Republicans have no excuse for having brought this minibus forward. She then proceeded to vote against the bills that both kept large parts of the government funded and included some $9.3 million in earmarks for her district. However, now that the money is being spent on her constituents, Greene is taking full credit. House Democratic staffer Aaron Frischner shared several screenshots of Greene's email blast from this week, which included various news reports about the spending in her district. Greene emails her constituents a Rome News Tribune write-up of her press release, boasting she secured over $3.8 million in federal funding for the runway extension at Richard B. Russell Regional Airport. The story fails to note that she voted against the bill, wrote Frischner on X, dubbing the practice, voting no and taking the dough. It's exactly what it is. Congresswoman Greene meticulously sought out projects that would improve quality of life, increase economic and social development, assist localities with vital funding needs, and harness community support, read the Rome News Tribune report, quoting Greene's office. This is like pathetic. This is like North Korea-style shit. Just give some flowery-sounding quote, and they write it down, and they don't even fact-check to say, hey, asshole, you voted against this. So anyway, this is the news report, and the Marjorie Taylor Greene comment. It's all laid out for you here. Business Insider noted that Representative Lauren Boebert also voted against the same bill, which included some $20 million for projects in her district that she is now campaigning on having secured. Can't wait for the ribbon cutting and to see these priorities come to fruition, Boebert said in a statement on Monday, noting the 10 different projects in her district set to receive the federal funds she voted against. Some 40 House Republicans voted in early March against the spending package that had earmarks for their districts. So look, here's the thing, man. Very simple point on this. Very simple point on this. If you're going to vote against it, look, that's democracy, right? Not everybody's going to vote the way I want them to vote every step of the way. That's obvious. But if you're going to vote against it, at least be principled enough and have enough integrity to pull a Ron Paul or a Thomas Massey and release a statement bragging about how you voted against this big government spending bill, which I fear will get us into more debt and will increase the deficit and lead to inflation. And you know all the typical scaremonger things they say about any government spending. Okay, well, release a statement defending your perspective, make an argument for your perspective, even if it's a wrong argument. At least acknowledge the facts of the matter. At least be open and honest. But they're not open. They're not honest. They have no integrity. They go out there and take credit for the fucking thing they voted against. Guys, if we were to pass universal health care tomorrow, all of these idiots would vote against it. And then in a matter of probably 5 or 10 years, they would be bragging about, oh, look at this amazing healthcare system we've created that I secured the funding for in my district. This is what happens. This is what happens. It's always happened. So the part that gets me is not even that she's just wrong on this. It's that she's lying. It's one thing to be wrong but be honest about it. It's another thing to be lying. Stop lying to all of these goons. Stop lying. Because you know what? The truth is going to come out. And now we've seen it every single time this happens. The truth comes out. Right? I remember when Joe Biden in 2012, in the vice president debate, called out Paul Ryan over this exact same thing. Voted against a bill, took credit when this stuff came into the district. You know, Biden said it in his State of the Union the other night. He was like, I see a lot of you guys taking credit for the money while voting against a bill. Well, you know, hey, feel free. Go ahead and send that money back. If you want, right? You can do that. No worries. Stop fucking lying. So anyway, the takeaway here is very straightforward. They're liars. They're full of shit. They have no idea how to govern. And they always try to hop in front of the parade. No matter how much they tried to stop the creation of the parade in the first place, they want to hop in front of it. Absolutely pathetic. So news came down the other day that Trump was unable to get a $464 million bond for the payment in his fraud case. He did insurance fraud, tax fraud, business fraud. So the fact that he can't get a bond means they're probably going to seize his properties and liquidate them. That's where we're at right now. He was able to get an $83 million bond for his previous case with E. Jean Carroll. None of the 30 companies are willing to do a $464 million bond. So, in step CNN, they're going to have a conversation about this. It's really more of a debate. And they invite on this guy, Kevin O'Leary. He is a billionaire. He's not a billionaire. Wrong. He's worth, I think it's a little over $400 million. And he was on CNN recently defending Trump the day he was found liable for fraud in this case. And he made horrible arguments to support him. But they're going to go back and forth here, the CNN host and Kevin O'Leary, and it gets kind of heated. So let's watch and we'll break it down. The headline here is CNN's Laura Coates throws down with Shark Tank's Kevin O'Leary in heated Trump debate. Quote, I have a wonderful voice and it won't be talked over. Okay, so let's dive into it and we'll break it down.
We are prepared to make sure that the judgment is paid to New Yorkers. And yes, I look at 40 Wall Street each and every day. If he does not have funds to pay off the judgment, then we will seek, judgment enforcement mechanisms in court. And we will ask the judge to seize his assets.
Now, you take, an issue with this, of course, more broadly in terms of what it means to be in an American business structure, Kevin. But in terms of the valuation, can you be clear as to why? I mean, why would the properties not be sufficient collateral?
What a great message to send out all around the world. Take a claim where there was no monies lost.
So he's already not answering the question, because the company said, we're not going to give you a bond, and you can't put up your properties as collateral. They wanted cash or cash equivalents. And she asks a very specific question. Why would they not accept the properties as collateral? And he just goes, he's going to start, you'll see, he's going to go off on this rant saying, oh, this is crazy and this is wrong and this is bad. Are you not even going to try to answer the question before you get into your, like, over defense of Trump mode? Here, let's keep going.
There was no fraud here in the context of actually people losing money. Deutsche Bank, who made the loan, was made whole. And let's make a penalty of $500 million against a crime, apparently, where no monies were lost. Great message for New York.
Okay, just to interject real quick. I hate it when people say monies. Say no money was lost, not no monies were lost. That's so weird to me. And he also does the Trump thing when he says billions. The word is billions, not billions. Billions. I don't know why people say it like that. It's like when people don't say nuclear, they say nuclear. I don't get it. Just say it the right way. It's not that difficult. All right, sorry. I'll stop interjecting until it gets heated.
New York, great message for America. Bring your capital because we'll protect your property. I think that was a statement that would be much better made sometime in Venezuela. I'm not kidding. That's a scary, scary message. And by the way, there are no such thing as half a billion dollar bonds. There are no $500 million bonds. Never been done before. Never. This law has never been applied. Forget about Trump. Nothing to do with Trump. Everything to do about America and the New York brand. I love this state. My children live here. A horrible message to everybody around the world watching this. Absolutely horrific.
Kevin,
he's adding nothing of substance. He's just having a meltdown. This is bad. This is really, I'm against this. Okay, Kevin, we know you're against it. You want to actually make an argument? He doesn't make a single fucking argument. By the way, everything he said so far, oh no, these weren't even crimes, bro. 100% untrue, and I'll break all that down for you at the end of it.
Hold on a second, Kevin.
Trump
will
be gone one day. This attorney general will be gone one day. And this is what you want to tell people around the world.
I have a wonderful voice, and it won't be talked over. Kevin O'Leary, I would like to hear what you have to say.
This is not America.
What are you doing?
It's not America,
but it is the Laura Coates live show, and I am speaking. So that will be the rule, not Venezuela, nowhere else. Fine, but it's Laura Coates Live. And hello, my name is Laura Coates. The question I want to ask you on this point, though, is what does the reverse say, Kevin, if they do not take action? And I hear your point about you believe there's no fraud and that everyone was made whole, but a judge found otherwise. And so given that, Catherine, to Kevin's point, can you address what your opinion is on the issue? Because your big major concern seems to be what happens if this is not followed through by James or the courts. What message would that sound? You seem to think that's anti-American.
Yeah, look, I'm surprised that Kevin is wasting his good name defending fraud and lies, which I am convinced, Kevin, you have not committed. I don't understand why are you defending the actions of someone who has committed these actions. That, again, there is ample evidence that he has done this. And the idea that just because, you know, the banks themselves may have been in on the fraud doesn't necessarily make it any better.
All right. So let's break this down. He literally said nothing of substance. And he goes, this is like Venezuela. That's what this is. It's Venezuela. He's like, there's no, I mean, bro, there's not even really any crimes here, bro. I haven't really any crimes, and I feel bad for, you know, the state of New York is telling wealthy people, don't come. No, what they're saying is, don't do crimes. So what actually happened? And by the way, I'm convinced he didn't even read the case. There's no way. There's no way he read the case. Because if he did, he wouldn't sound this ignorant on it. So what's the problem? All right. Well, for one thing, Trump would undervalue his properties when it came time to pay taxes. Say it's worth way less than it actually is, so we had a lower tax bill. He would also overvalue it when trying to sell properties or promote them or get loans from banks or get money from insurance companies on more favorable terms. Okay? So right off the bat, that's fraud. You can't do that. If you do that and you try to lower your tax bill and you try to inflate your property for whatever reason, they would come after your ass. Okay? He did that. He got away with it for decades. Now it's finally catching up to him. So that's not okay. It's not okay to do that. Right off the bat, that's already a crime. Okay. He also falsified business records, a crime. Issued false financial statements, a crime. Did insurance fraud. Did bank fraud. He had 200 plus false and misleading asset valuations. Over 200 of them. His Wall Street property, he listed it as worth over $500 million. It's worth $200 million. Trump's apartment, he said, was 30,000 square feet. It was 11,000 square feet. He said it was worth $327 million. That would be a price higher than any apartment has ever sold in New York City history. He overstated the price of his apartment by $200 million. So he did this to increase his net worth and get banks to offer him more favorable terms. Mar-a-Lago gets revenue of $25 million. It's valued at maximum $75 million. Trump said it was worth $739 million. And there's even times he says it's worth over $1 billion. Trump got a loan of $170 million from Deutsche Bank and sold the old post office for over $300 million for a profit of $100 million. But he got the loan based on false pretenses and fraud. This was released from the New York Attorney General. It was 280 pages. This guy read none of them. And to that woman's point, she makes a good point there. She's like, he said, oh, no, victimless crime. No, I got hurt. When you're doing this fraud, you are manipulating the marketplace. And as a billionaire or 400 millionaire, whatever he is, he should be well aware you cannot do that. That is a crime for a reason. So ultimately, what's at the bottom of this? What's at the core of this guy wants a free pass for multimillionaires and billionaires to cheat, to cut corners, to get away with stuff, and to not have to suffer the penalties of their own actions, have no consequences. That's what he wants, no accountability whatsoever. Because he feels like, hey, me and my class of people, multimillionaires and billionaires, we're above the law. We should be above the law. You know, he thinks we're all job creators and we're all productive and how dare the government step in and enforce the laws that already exist. Fuck off. Listen, anybody, any other regular person would have the IRS up their ass for doing 1/100th of what Trump did, right? And you want him to be able to get away with all this? And again, he was asked a very specific question about why won't the companies that won't issue a bond, why won't they accept his properties as collateral? That's why he was brought on, like to answer that specific technical question. Because I want to know the answer to that too. I would have assumed they would have accepted the properties. But they didn't, right? So he's asked that, and he just goes right, this is Venezuela. Trump did nothing wrong. He did nothing wrong. Shut up. It's so wrong and so ignorant and so annoying. Like, at least fucking make a real argument. That's what drives me crazy. Could you at least give me people to debunk or argue with who make a fucking point? This makes my life too easy. All I have to do is scroll back to the notes I took when I read the New York Attorney General's press release and got all the facts from it. All I had to do was pull that up and run through it, and destroys his point. Like, even the most minimal level of research makes this guy look like a total jackass. So, but then again, just so everybody knows, this is the same guy who, remember when that Oxfam report came out years ago? And at the time, it was like the richest 28 people in the world or something have more wealth than the bottom 50% of the planet. Something like that. It was like 28 people have more wealth than the bottom 3.5 billion. It was something like that. And he went on a bunch of TV shows and he was like, that's good. Because it gives people something to work towards. It gives them more incentive to work hard. It's like the whole point of the Oxfam report is we don't live in a meritocracy. Things are incredibly rigged. The income and wealth inequality is colossally out of whack. It's not the harder you work, the further you go. That's a myth. And that was the conclusion of the report, and he flips it on his head, and he's like, this shows meritocracy is real. Really? Those fucking 28 people? Many of them just inheriting the fucking money from their parents and their grandparents. They just worked harder and are better than 3.5 billion people. Fuck off. God, he's a moron. I don't even know why they allow him on these shows. What a joke. So one of the most weaselly, shrill, little conservative political commentators, Mark Levin, he posted some gold the other day. So this is in Mediaite. Mark Levin demands to know why Republican billionaires aren't posting Trump's $454 million bond. Quote, this isn't outraged. Oh, you can't make this stuff up, man. Oh, you can't make this stuff up. So they go on to explain, you know, the backstory. Trump was able to get the bond for the E. Jean Carroll stuff, $83.3 million. But now we tried to get a bond for the fraud trial in New York, insurance fraud, bank fraud, tax fraud, all that stuff, $454 million. And of 30 companies, zero of them would issue the bond. Zero. And so that, of course, pissed off conservatives. But now Mark Levin has a very clever idea. He says, I'm going to read it in his voice. Why are there no Republican multi-billionaires offering to lend President Trump the funds to file his appeal in the outrageous case in New York State? Are none of them liquid enough to help or join with others to help? This is an outrage. All right, dork. Calm down. So, and by the way, he ended up getting roasted in the replies and stuff. So a few points. First of all, why would anybody need to help him if he is this massive billionaire that he claims to be? I don't, like, okay, he got himself in trouble. He has to deal with it. In theory, you know, we were led to believe he probably has the funds. So fucking pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, son. This is the old conservative idea. Like, you take care, you handle your own business. This is your responsibility. You got the money, you do it. So right off the bat, he just, you know, just deflecting responsibility away from him. Second of all, yeah, gee, Mark, I wonder why others won't step in to lend him the money. Gee, I wonder. Could it be because homie has a track record of stiffing all sorts of different people that he's worked with and that have been allies over the years? Trump's had like 7 different attorneys over the past 5 years, and he stiffed virtually all of them. Now he's down to some, like, you know, strip mall level freak who's never done any serious case ever, and now representing Trump all over the place, Alina Habba lady. Like, this is where we're at right now. There have been copious articles detailing, going all the way back to 2015 and 2016, all the people who worked with Trump, whether they're electricians and they were working on a casino of his or a hotel of his, and they were plumbers and all different sorts of people. And they come out and they say, look, I like the guy, I work with the guy, and then he fucking stiffed me. I'm out $200,000 for all this work I did for one of his, you know, his properties. There's endless evidence that that's the case. Also, by the way, let's be clear, apart from this New York fraud that we're talking about, which they think is bullshit, it's not. But he's already had to pay millions of dollars for the Trump University fraud. It was like over $20 million, and a bunch of people proved it was fraud, and he had to pay it out. Now, part of that deal was he doesn't have to admit it was fraud. It's all, you know, it was like a let's cut a deal outside of court so this doesn't have to go any further. And he clearly paid them enough where they would keep their mouth shut, but it was fraud. He committed fraud. And so this is the best you can come up with. It's an outrage. They won't pay for that. By the way, you guys remember in 2020, when Trump was trying to do the whole stop the steal thing, he raised over $250 million to, quote, stop the steal. Nobody knows where that money went. Nobody knows where it went. By the way, Laura Trump just took the reins of the RNC, and they're going to turn that into an organization that is responsible for trying to get Trump across the finish line in the general election. By the way, all the down ballot races, pfft, you're assed out, son. Good luck. You raising funds to help with your race? I wouldn't count on that. They're probably going to redirect it all to him. So he's got all these PACs. He shook down his people before. Now he's got the RNC at his disposal. He's got multiple $100+ million properties. Why the fuck would anybody else? He should have to pay this himself. And again, as y'all notice, none of these people ever get into the specifics of the case to say, here's exactly why I think this is wrong and this is wrong and this is wrong. They don't do that because they know the second you entertain any of the specifics, it's impossible to deflect and obfuscate and pretend like there's no merit to any of it. This is why we always say it's 91 criminal charges against him. Is the contention of all these people who are still defending him, literally in zero of these cases, did he do something wrong? Zero. Even if you want to be as kind to Trump as possible, it's like, you're going to find at least 12 of those fuckers are real charges. That he fucking did it, right? But they can't help themselves. They can't help themselves. And by the way, Mark Levin, weaselly little prick, was a big DeSantis stan when he thought DeSantis was going to be the one to carry the mantle forward for the Republican Party. As soon as it became clear, God damn it, our boy's not breaking through. Flips on a dime. Right back to coddling Trump's nutsack. Ben Shapiro just did the same thing. He was riding hard for DeSantis in the primary. As soon as it became clear, oh, it's going to be Trump, Ben releases a video where he says, not only am I going to vote for Trump, I'm going to fundraise for Trump. And he goes as far as to say, I would crawl over broken glass to vote for Trump. I don't know if he said crawl or walk, one of the two. I'm going to go over broken glass to vote for Trump, to support Trump. Why are these guys doing it? Do they really have no criticism of the guy? Did they really like, oh, I really love it? No, they're going, it's one of these. Where's the political winds going? Oh, I don't want to piss off my audience. Let's have a competition to see who can be the most sycophantic in defense of this freak. And that's where we are. Telling Republican billionaires, why don't you help them with this? By the way, final point. Let's assume for argument's sake that happens. Let's assume, you know, the remaining Koch brother or one of the other Republican billionaires steps in and they're like, you know what, Mark, you're right. I'm going to pay off this fine for him. No problem whatsoever. Don't you realize that sets up a situation where if he's president again, he owes that person everything? Do you think he's going to be governing for what's best for his constituents and the American people? Do you think he's going to be making decisions based on the health of the nation? No. In a situation like that, he is a puppet of whoever would pay that. And by the way, he's already taken a tremendous amount of money from corporations, a tremendous amount of money from other billionaires. He's got all these deals with these other foreign governments. Jared Kushner took millions from Israel. Jared Kushner took $2 billion from Saudi Arabia. Trump himself has taken at least tens of millions from Saudi Arabia with the Live Golf events and things of that nature. There was another article about how the government of Oman has given Trump a tremendous amount of money. He's already subservient to these other interests. He'll make biased decisions for them. And Mark Levin wants to add to that. Let's add another couple billionaires who are really going to be the real owners of the country because they helped a president pay off a $54 million fraud fine. Here's a pro tip. Just don't do the fraud in the first place. How about that? Try that one. So we've talked quite a bit about Twitter and how at first it was like a slow implosion of the platform when Elon took over. Now it's sped up. Now, like every day, it's like, oh my God, what the fuck's going on here? So the biggest thing that I couldn't get over, you all remember this. He portrayed himself as a free speech warrior and I'm taking over so we could like have the First Amendment on Twitter and all stuff like that. Then come to find out, not only was that not true, he was more censorious than Jack in the previous regime. Remember the day where they like banned 12 different journalists or something like that because they reported on the feud Elon was having with that Elon Jet account that tracks his jet. And Elon claimed, hey, that's doxing. But under the law, it's actually not doxing. Flight information is publicly available to everybody. Well, any reporter that reported on that, boom, their account was axed. And this is a consistent trend with him, right? He says he loves free speech, but as soon as something offends his sensibilities, it's ban happy all day long, baby. I mean, he literally said, remember when he said, I'm going to ban from the river to the sea? Remember that? At the beginning of the moral panic over the backlash to Israel's war crimes. The guy's a joke, right? He really is a joke. The more I hear him talk, I'm astonished at how dumb Elon Musk is. I thought the argument that was most convincing is like, he's a weird guy. He's an eccentric guy. But look at what he did with SpaceX and Starlink and all these companies. He's got to be somewhat intelligent. The more I hear him talk, the more I'm like, holy fucking shit. This dude is like a 14-year-old 4chaner who is genuinely idiotic and tripped over his dick and became successful, right? Goes to show you that your economic value, your market value is not the same as your human value or your intelligence. Okay, so I got to share this with you. Mark Bankston, who we've had on Crystal Kyle and Friends before, great guy. He's a lawyer. he tweeted this amazing thread here of ads that he's now getting on Twitter. These are absolutely horrifying ads. These are the ads that remain, because these are the companies that remain that are paying Twitter. All of like the big brands, you know, the big names, they're like, shit, we don't want to be associated with this. You got Nazi stuff proliferating, all sorts of insanity. It's like a race to the bottom. So look at this. First one. Okay, first of all, I don't even know what language this is, right? What language is this like Twitter name in? Zelo QFY. Designed for comfort, engineered for support. And you have this picture, Dr. Lewis McKinnon, getting shoulder surgery can make your shoulder pain worse. Here's why. And you get this weird ass picture of this dude wearing this like terrifying helmet, something out of a dystopian sci-fi futuristic thing, right? Look at this. Ergonomic shoulder braces, last day promo. What on earth is this company? What on earth is this ad? All right, more. Apparently, Mark Bankston cannot stop getting this one particular ad. Look at this. What the fuck? And it's different people tweeting them and then having the ad. They're all like bots. The bot problem is out of this world now on Twitter. It is astonishing how many bots there are. It's way worse than it used to be. The blue check thing was also insane. Like, you pay for the blue check, and the people who had blue checks who were notable. The whole point of the blue check was to protect from impersonation, because there was a lawsuit over impersonation. So the blue check was like, this person is the notable person that you're looking for. Now it's reversed. Everybody had their blue check stripped, and now people pay for the blue check, and it's just randos with blue checks. All right, how about this one? Sometimes it keeps popping up literally every third or fourth tweet talking about that same weird helmet thing. I also cannot escape these counterfeit Skechers that insist I'm not a man if I hate their shoes. Again, what language is this? I don't know what language this is for this Twitter name. If someone says I hate sneakers and they don't suit me, I think that person is not a man. It's some counterfeit ass Skechers. Look at this. More of the just hammered with this ad. I also get weird ass ads too, bro. There's also plenty of these crypto scams using Musk's picture. Jesus, you would think Elon would want to crack down on this. Diego Atio Rocco. It's happening. Elon Musk launches X token presale amidst the recent crypto surge. Stay tuned. The thrill's on its way. Elon Musk launches X token presale amidst the recent crypto surge. Total, absolute crypto scam. Very obvious. This is the stuff that's running. He says there's plenty of anime profile pic blue check selling me drop shipped crap. Say goodbye to dirty and smelly traditional brushes. One touch removal. You no longer need to touch the mess. Pre-installed cleaner. Ready to tackle any stain. Proven results. Beat traditional brushes and silicone brushes. Look at this. What are we doing here? Now there's so many like drop shipping scam ads that you see community notes in some of the ads saying, don't, this is not a reputable company. Don't do it. Also, apparently, we're just doing ads in the Notes app now. I've gotten this ad before, too. It's something for GoPuff, and it says 40% off alcohol. GoPuff is giving new customers 40% off their first alcohol order on the app. Order now and get alcohol delivered to your door in as fast as 15 minutes. Use code CHEERS40 at checkout. Literally, some company, some probably scam-ass company, doing an ad right in the Notes app and just tweeting out a screen capture of the Notes app. What are we doing here? There's a lot to unpack in this herbal Viagra pitch, but don't worry, as the ad says, nothing bad will happen. Problems with the snake size? After this thing, your snake won't fit in your hand. Everything happens on its own without needing any help. Nothing bad will happen. What the fuck is this? This is terrifying. What are we looking at? These are now the companies that remain. Here's a transparent sphere for your cat. Can anyone tell me why I just know about this one? Both my cat and dog, I loved it. Like, what is this? What a colossal implosion and fall from grace for Twitter. Can anyone tell me? This is, again, another thing for the freaking, for the cat thing. Anyway, what the fuck, man? What the fuck? I honestly have no idea what's going to happen in the future with Twitter. Could it just no longer exist? That's possible. Hopefully, best case scenario, there's some sort of a forced sale to a different owner, and they do their best to get back to the basics as to what made it work in the first place. But right now, man, this is a cesspool. All right, y'all. So this story right here is kind of a big deal. This is amazing. So Axios reports that the U.S. hits a new low in the World Happiness Report. So this is something we've talked about before, this World Happiness Report, because there's a lot you can learn from just looking at who self-reports being the happiest in the various countries around the world. So we had a big slip. So here, let me show you. So this is what it looks like. Number one, Finland. Number two, Denmark. Number three, Iceland, Sweden. We're all the way down here now. The UAE and Slovenia are happier than us at the moment. So here's what they say. The U.S. hit an all-time low ranking in the annual World Happiness Report, tumbling 8 spots to 23rd. Some countries like Finland and Denmark consistently rank among the world's happiest. The U.S. isn't one of them. By the way, we're going to get to, why is that, that Finland and Denmark and a lot of the Nordic countries, Scandinavian countries, they always rank pretty high up there. I wonder. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. A steady supply of studies has found that Americans feel glum about issues ranging from loneliness to the economy to the country's political leadership. It's the first time since the report launched 12 years ago that the U.S. did not rank among the world's 20 happiest countries. Jesus, man. Gallup, whose data powers the World Happiness Report, pointed to Americans under 30 feeling worse about their lives for the steep drop. Today's young people report feeling less supported by friends and family, less free to make life choices, more stressed, and less satisfied with their living conditions. Lara Aknin, an editor of the report, told Axios, "People under 30 today also feel less confident in government and have increased perceptions of corruption." She added, "Gee, I wonder why they perceive more corruption. Could it be because there's a shitload of corruption that we've all witnessed now on a daily basis? Yeah, I wonder." The report also found that older people are now happier than young people in North America, the opposite of many other regions. Many Americans have expressed low levels of trust in the political system and fears of political violence. Again, gee, I wonder why they fear political violence. Could it be because we had political violence not that long ago? You can go all the way back to the George Floyd protests and riots. You can go back to January 6th and the storming of the Capitol and the whole fraudulent elector scheme. Everything is very unstable at the moment. And that's not just a perception. That's the reality. The pandemic also shed light on the high rates of loneliness hitting America's younger generations. The U.S. has also been combating inflation rates that have affected everything from dining out to the real estate market. And look, it's also true to point out, this generation, so I was the beginning of the generation that grew up and there was a lot of technology, right? I remember when I was a kid, I had AOL and AIM, right? The instant messenger thing. And, you'd do a decent amount of computer time. Remember Napster and LimeWire and all that stuff. But ultimately, it came down to what? An hour or two a day on the computer. And then most of the time, and then you'd watch an hour of TV or whatever. But there was still a decent amount of interaction in real life, getting out there, playing sports, all stuff like that. This next generation is even more technological, always on TikTok, always on Instagram, always on YouTube. By the way, stay on YouTube, baby. That one gets exempt from any sort of criticism I'm about to do right now. But yeah, you do get the sense, especially with when we had the pandemic and we had lockdowns. Now it's people are immersed in a virtual world, the overwhelming majority of the time. And I'm not somebody who's just against social media. I'm not. And I use Twitter. Obviously, my job is YouTube, right? But I do think everything needs to be kind of balanced. And I think we got a little out of balance where there's too much of that and not enough in-person stuff, not enough playing sports, getting outside, touching grass, as the kids would say. So I think that definitely plays a part in it. Smaller than what most, some people would pin it literally all on just that. That I don't agree with. I think it's part of the problem. But the other thing, as they're pointing out, is that young people have zero faith in the system. Zero. And that's earned. They're not wrong for thinking that. But, when you look at a political system where 92% of the time, the people who raise the most money on the campaign trail end up winning, and then you track that money and you find it's all coming from billionaires and multinational corporations, and that's who these politicians are serving instead of the people, it's easy to get cynical because you should get cynical. That's the proper reaction to that. What we need to do is change that. But obviously that's easier said than done. But kids understand, oh, shit is kind of fucked, right? And by the way, when you look at, like, we've showed this chart before. I don't have it up right now, but when it comes to, like, the percentage of the national wealth that is owned and you break it down by generation, boomers are off the fucking chart with the amount of wealth they hold. Gen X is a big plummet, but they're, like, in the middle. And then millennials and Gen Z are, like, barely a fucking blip. We have, like, none of the national wealth compared to the boomers. And to be fair, the Gen Xers have it almost as rough as millennials and Gen Z because they're closer to us than they are to the boomers, right? Now, part of that is just a function of the longer you're alive and the more you work, the more money you're going to gain. Yes, that's true. But when you compare where we are now as younger generations to where they were at this age back when they were our age, they were doing way better. They were just doing way better. So, man, we plummeted outside of that top 20, man. So now, what lessons can we learn here? Well, like I said, Finland, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden, a lot of these countries are the happiest. By the way, the fact that Israel is number five, it's like, Jesus Christ, that's... Anyway, Finland, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden, the top ones. So a lot of the Nordic countries, Scandinavian countries, and they consistently rank at the top of the happiness ranking. Well, why is that? Well, one of the things we could point to, the strength of trade unions in Nordic politics and economics. The Nordic countries continue to have the highest union density in the world. In 2016, of all blue and white-collar workers, membership of trade unions amounted to 52% in Norway, 65% in Finland, 84% in Iceland, 66% in Sweden, and 67% in Denmark. By comparison, between 20 and 30% of employees are generally unionized in most other European countries. And in the U.S., it's 10%. Okay. This is one reason people would be a hell of a lot happier. Why? Because when you're in a union, we are collectively looking out for our class interests. And so people are going to get paid more, going to get better benefits, going to get more time off, and you're going to be a more fulfilled person if you're not just chasing a paycheck all day, every day, trying to keep the fucking lights on. So this is good for workers. This is good for the middle class. This is good for making people feel more fulfilled. You know, if you don't get all your meaning and purpose from your job, well, then you have to get it on your free time. But if you don't have any fucking free time, it's hard to get some meaning, right? Okay, so now, look at this one. Key vacation rules to be aware of in Sweden. And this is, I think I have the chart up here in just a second right here. Yeah, okay. So I'll sum it up for you. Vacation time in a lot of these Nordic countries, you get a whole bunch of paid vacation time, paid sick time, paid maternity leave, paid paternity leave. And these things are by law. So in other words, it's not like, yeah, we'll give you the time off, but you're not getting a fucking dime. It'll be like you are working and you get this time off and you get paid. Yeah, that's going to make people happy. If you have a fucking month off every year, if you have the equivalent of when you were a kid and there was summer vacation and you're off for a little, hey, this is awesome. Imagine being an adult and having effectively a summer vacation. Might not be literally in the summer, but you could have, yeah, people are going to feel a little bit better in that scenario, aren't they? Oh, I could actually do things I want to do that make me happy? Like, yeah, crazy idea, right? Then there's this, access to healthcare in the Scandinavian countries. So when you look at them, The specifics and the particulars definitely vary, right? There's different versions of universal healthcare systems in these different countries. But the connecting tissue in all the countries is universal healthcare. Some of them have a single-payer system. Some of them have a multi-payer system. Some of them have a UK-style system where it's all government. It's all nationalized. Others have a system where it's public money going to private hospitals and private doctors. It's a mix all over the place, but the connecting tissue is universal healthcare, free at the point of service. Gee, you think that's going to make people happier? I wonder. I wonder if 41% of Americans have medical debt. The number one cause of bankruptcy in this country is medical bills. Gee, do you think it's a weight off your shoulders if you don't have to worry about going bankrupt because a family member has fucking cancer? Gee, I wonder. That's a real hard one to figure out, isn't it? And I want to show you this. U.S., the only advanced economy that does not require employers to provide paid vacation time, report says. This one, now this is an old article, to be fair, it's from 2013, but not much has changed. And so it's hard to see. This is kind of blurry. and it won't even let me click on it here, but the United States, zero paid holidays and paid vacation days, and all these other countries just blowing us out of the water, man. Blowing us out of the water. So those countries, the people in those countries, self-report being much happier because they get better wages, workers are looked out for more, they have collective bargaining, they get more time off for self-fulfillment and self-actualization, free healthcare. A lot of these countries have free or nearly free college, right? You don't have to worry about, like, the basics are kind of looked, they look after your basics in the social democracies. The basics are taken care of. The necessities of life are taken care of. And it's a lot easier for people to get by and feel happy and feel fulfilled if you don't have to worry about the bare minimum shit, right? We have to worry about it here. Mix that with a highly atomized society under capitalism and with technology where people are immersed in a digital world most of the time, you know, and mix that with political corruption where there's zero faith in our institutions, rightly so. All these illegal wars we threw trillions of dollars at and the torture and all that stuff. Put all that together. And yeah, people are really like, this is miserable. This is miserable. The one final thing I'd say, though, is don't be a doomer and don't be a nihilist. We're like, this will never change and it's always going to be like that. No, it will go where the culture demands it goes, right? And any sort of change takes time. But in the same way, it's not inevitable things get better. It's also not inevitable things get worse. I believe in chaos theory that, like, shit just sort of happens over time and happens with random trajectories and random patterns. And so right now, we're in a downturn. Right now, we're going in the wrong direction. But that doesn't mean it's going to stay like that. And eventually, we'll go in the other direction. We just have to make that happen, right? So I don't want to make this sound doomer or nihilistic. But there are real answers as to how to make people happier, how to improve the system. And what we need to do is acknowledge that there are real answers, learn from the countries that are above us, and start implementing some of those changes. Easier said than done, but that should be our goal. That should be our aim. If we make us a thriving social democracy, people will definitely self-report being much happier. Because you know what? Even if you give me all the stuff that they got in these social democracies, but I live in one of those countries, let me tell you something. I would not be okay with the sun setting at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I would not be okay with those long, cold-ass, snowy-ass winters. So even with all this stuff, I'd be miserable if I was in some of these Nordic countries. But imagine having some nice weather and a social democracy. Boom, now we're talking, baby. Now I'll self-report that I'm happy off the charts. So really sad that the U.S. plummeted so low, but I understand why it is. I think it's pretty clear to see why it is, and that needs to change. All right, guys, that's the show, y'all. Love y'all very much. Everybody do me a big favor. Please subscribe to the channel. Helps out in the algorithm. Costs you nothing. Click that bell icon so you get a notification every single time a video comes out. Leave a comment. Leave a like. All that fun stuff. Share the video around. Show it to your uncle, your conservative uncle. Maybe he'll hate me. Maybe he'll like me. But hey, why not? Take a stab in the dark. Give it a shot. And that's all I got for you. You can support the show on Patreon with the link below or tip with the thanks button on YouTube. Again, I deeply appreciate it. I've never talked to an advertiser, never want to. You guys fund this through small dollar donations. I'm very, very thankful for you. And I'll see you guys tomorrow. Everybody have a great rest of your day. Tune into Crystal Kyle and Friends later in the week. Peace.